call the Tax Committee to order. This morning, members, first we're going to take up the Omnibus Education Finance Bill. We have with us this morning Senator Stump on Senate File 1328, and I believe we have a technical amendment that Senator Stump would like to have authored.
I'd move it, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Pogamano moves to A41, and this is just a technical amendment to, as Senator Stump, as I understand, to smooth out the per pupil cut between the 2 years of the biennium. Is that an accurate way to describe this?
Mr. Chairman and members, yes. Right after our committee, the Education Finance Division dealt with this bill in the first day. We actually dealt with it in 2 days. We got new guidelines from the U.S. Department of Education, and those guidelines kind of rearranged the way we did the backfilling with the federal money. And so when we made the adjustment at that time, we felt we had to do it in a certain way. And consequently, the runs for the backfilling was quite uneven. And so Mr. Melcher from the Department of Education worked with Mr. Nauman and came up with this amendment, which again makes the reductions which are in this bill even from in 2010 and in 2011. And then there's the rest of it is quite technical in terms of adjustments.
On the Pogamano motion to adopt the A41, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Contrary, no. Motion prevails. The amendment's adopted. Senator Skoy.
Mr. Chair and members, I would like to offer the A43 amendment.
It's hard to hide.
Senator Skoy offers the A43.
And Mr. Chair and members, this is an amendment that would reduce the property tax impacts in 2012 and 2013. The Senate Property Tax Division, the Senate Tax Committee has been concerned about this, and I think this is a good effort to keep property taxes down in Minnesota.
Any discussion, members? On the Skoy motion to adopt A43. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Contrary, no. Motion prevails. A43 is adopted.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Skoy.
I would offer the A40 amendment.
Senator Skoy offers the A40. Members, this is the issue that Representative Irv Anderson put in law relative to swimming pool levies. This makes two additional school districts along the Canadian border eligible to do the pool levy.
Thanks.
Any discussion? On the Skoy motion to adopt the A40. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Contrary, no. Motion prevails. The A40 is adopted.
It's one other. 42.
Does anybody else have an amendment? We got some committee members not here yet, so maybe we may have something else, members. Council has an additional amendment, but it might be one of the members that's not here right now. So maybe we'll start. Senator Scheid?
Mr. No, go ahead with what you're saying, and then I do have a question.
Senator Stump, maybe you and Council can walk through the I don't think the Tax Committee wants to hear about all the aids in the bill, but we are interested in the property tax and the levy, the idea of your consolidation levy. So if you could walk through the levy portion of the bill for us.
Sure. Mr. Chairman and members, there are a couple provisions that are familiar to the Tax Committee. One of them is what we call the consolidation levy. The consolidation levy takes three levies, the equity levy, the transition levy, and the operating capital levy. and puts those together, and then we call that a consolidated levy. That consolidated levy is on page 11 of your bill language, and you can see the consolidation of that levy, and it operates very similar, almost identical to a general education levy. When we did that and created that, it had about a $22 million shifting of levies across the state of Minnesota. And so we have paid off that levy increase for 2011. And that is what you'll see on section 25, 26, and 27. And then Mr. Nauman can go through those a little bit later. There's one other provision that I want to bring your attention to, and that is in the Education Committee, you'll see on page 14 the referendum revenue, which is section 31. We had a long discussion of the referendum recall petition and recall. As you know, when a referendum is put up by a school district or called by a school district, that's usually a huge effort on the part of school districts to pass referendums. And there are two provisions in law. One is that a referendum can be initiated by a petition, and it can also be recalled or put up again for vote by a petition. And as you'll see on the language on bottom of page 15, clause D, it takes 15% of the voters to do that under current law. Well, it was the thinking on the part of the Education Finance Committee that there's so much effort put into the initiation of a referendum, the campaign of a referendum, and the voting on a referendum, that there's a lot of concern out there, and especially as our referendums come up for renewal, that this is such an important part of the funding of our school districts. Close to 94% of our districts have referendums. The public has been part of this whole process in passing that referendum. Why should there be effort to undo that referendum once it's been passed and built into the education funding system? So that language is new, and I believe those are the main two provisions that would relate to taxes. There are a couple small levies. Now I understand there's a new levy that was added, or actually it wasn't a new levy, but there are a couple levies that relate to elevator safety. There's two school districts that have elevators that are in disrepair. I believe they're condemned. And so there's a very modest levy for, I think it was Lac-La-Parle and for Richfield in here. One is like $250,000, another one is like $8,000, I believe, $8,700. So those are, I believe, the impacts, and Mr. Nauman can go through the, maybe before you do, Mr. Nauman, just to give you a sense of what education entails. There's over 1.3 million learners that participate in our education system in the state each year. About 160 37,000 teachers, licensed teachers. The state's portion, the general fund portion, is about $6.9 billion a year, about $1.9 billion in local property taxes, and about $600 million in federal funds. There's over $1.5 billion that goes into our special education system, and there's 2,000 public school buildings in the state, and so it's a huge impact affecting all of our communities. And even with the dramatic reductions and cuts that have occurred over the last number of years,
what do we get
from our education system?
Pool amendment.
And the results are still very positive. When you look at where we stand with our students testing, you know, on the SAT scores, Minnesota's number 5 in the nation. Our ACT, we're number 9 in the nation.
Yeah, the anti-gender.
Results from a international test or compilation, and we came in 2nd of all the states, right behind Massachusetts. It's called the TIMSS report, and that's an international survey report. And I believe Minnesota had the highest growth of any nation in the math area. And so there's tremendous results taking place out there, even with the tremendous financial stress that our districts are under. And I think that's a tremendous accomplishment for our education system, given those kinds of conditions. So sometimes we don't always hear about the people that education deal with, or the dollar amounts that go in there, or the results that come out of it. But I think it's a very positive picture and one that we need to thank our education system a lot for the efforts that they put in. So, Mr. Nelman?
So, Mr. Chair and members, there's a series of documents in your packet today. We'll spend most of our time on maybe 3, maybe only 1, depending on your time. A in tax is a document that is oriented in this manner. This is the education aids, primarily a finance jurisdiction issue, but I will briefly mention on line 206 of that document, you can see that education general fund expenditures are down $972.5 million in 10 and 11 relative to the base, and in fiscal 12, $1.4 million, and that those conform with the targets that the Finance Committee gave to the Education Funding Division. I can spend more detail on those. You can see how the interplay of the amendment that you just took versus some of the other changes. B is the document we'll spend most time on. It. I'll skip over that just for the quick moment. Mention C in tax is the data run that we smoothed out. This is the revenue reductions to school districts in fiscal years 10 and 11. Members will note that underneath columns B and F are federal dollars coming back into the system to offset some of the general fund reductions that have been taken in the AIDS portion of the budget. Then columns data runs D and E relate directly to the consolidated levy that Senator Stump spoke to earlier. In Minnesota, we've used two primary means of equalization over the years. We're returning in the consolidated levy to a general education type equalization, where all school districts in the state are required to levy at an identical rate, so that the tax effort will be the same in each school district in the state. And what we've done, it's an imperfect run, but on run D, you can see what the the rate essentially was for school districts prior to the consolidation and then after the consolidation. And members will note that the numbers jumped around before, and they were now bringing everyone back to the average. Of course, parenthetically, I'll add that those districts that actually saw increases are held harmless through a provision that Senator Stumpf mentioned, but going forward after that, everyone will be at identical rate. That's what D is. Then column E shows how the mechanisms of the shows the mechanisms of the consolidation. We begin with equity operating capital and transition, and QComp. These are the levies inside the general education program. QComp is set aside. It's rolled out of the general education program. So it shows up on the far right-hand side, and members will note that there's no changes to that program, unlike Senate bills in years past. So the total gen ed levies under current law without QComp is $227.3 million, and that is the exact monetary value of the consolidated levy. So that when you, I'm now looking at the column labeled total difference gen ed levy, Senate file 1328 minus current law. So you see some ins and outs, uppers and downers. And those districts that see increases, with two exceptions, have an adjustment, and that is that's the consolidated levy and alternative facilities bonding adjustment. Most districts are seeing savings as a result of that, and those districts that see those savings are the ones that had increases as a result of the consolidation. To pay for that consolidation, we had to change property tax savings in two districts and then allocate that savings across the balance of the districts that had increases. Those two districts were primarily urban core districts. And so if there are further questions, I just skimmed over that quickly. In the interest of your time, I'd like to return to B and walk you through the sort of the statewide snapshot. And I know that this being the tax committee, it's you've wanted to look at the trends in the past, so we've shown taxes going all the way back to fiscal 2002, which was the last year of the general education levy before the buyout occurred in fiscal 2003. So you can see that on line two, the general ed levy was $1.3 billion. Of course, that's not what we paid for in that year because there were some credits that offset that total amount. Then, Mr. Chairman and members, I think it's probably important to begin looking at the columns listed Senate fiscal year 11, pay 2010, and then the differences that are computed just to the right of that. So if you look on line 7, we had a previous transition levy at $25.2 million, an equity levy at $77.5 million, and an operating capital of $124.4 million. And then the alternative compensation levy, sometimes referred to as the QComp levy, at 22.3. Then the subsequent line shows the QComp as being essentially zeroed out. That gets added back at a subsequent point on the spreadsheet. The next line is the consolidated levy establishment at 227.3. And then the savings that I mentioned for those districts that saw increases in fiscal year 2011. So the total savings in the general education program is listed at 44.3, it being slightly deceptive because of the rollout of QComp. We're really only saving about $22 million. And, Mr. Chairman, as a result of the amendment, on line 16, in fiscal years 12 and 13, there were previously levy increases of $200 million and $350 million coming out of division and finance. You'll note that those now are back down to the base level, so there's no increases as a result of that on the levy tracking. Are there questions on general education? Okay, so Mr. Chairman and members, the governor had a recommendation to cap the integration revenue program at fiscal 2009 levels. That generates a little bit of levy savings in fiscal years 10 and 11, and then we'll see an adjustment in a subsequent line for that. Skipping to the second page, on line 49 at the top of the second page is where the alternative compensation levy gets added back at $22.3 million. Senator Stumpf mentioned a couple of smaller levies, the elevator levy, $25,000, and on line 56, $8,500 for Richfield and Lackey Parle Valley, respectively. I skipped over the swimming pool levy, but in a subsequent version of this spreadsheet, Mr. Chairman, you can anticipate $300,000 a year for the monetary effect of that amendment that you added on. Line 81 is the catch-up for the levy attributable to fiscal year 2010, taxes payable 2009 for the governor's integration proposal. It's carried in the language of the bill. Then on page 3, we have on lines 130, 131, 132, some small levy effects associated with fund transfers. Members will recall that under language in the public finance sections of the statutes there, we have to carry levy impacts associated with debt service levies that would have credited back to the taxpayers as a future savings when we make a fund transfer. So there are levy effects associated with those. And Mr. Chairman and members, thankfully we're getting through this fairly quickly. I think the next one of note, line 138, is the alternative facilities debt aid. Back in 1998, there was a provision added in law for school districts that had alternative facilities debt in that year that they would generate some savings due to some other things that were happening in the tax bill that year. In this year of budget reductions, in order to pay for the some of the effects of the consolidated levy, this is those districts that were seeing increasers. We took some savings from those districts to pay for the levies. In most part, at least one of those districts that sees reduced savings as a result of this line item, they're generating a substantial amount of savings after the consolidation. So I'm talking about the St. Paul School District now. So they will see a bunch of savings as a result of that, and then there'll be a slight increase as a result of this line item. So, Mr. Chairman and members, that concludes. I think that's the last of the line item changes. I think it's important now to look at the very last page, where I'm now on line 189, where we have total certified levies post credits for the E-12 bill. So in fiscal year 2011, that's taxes payable 2009, there's savings of $6.7 million in the bill as it's been amended before you. Levies increased slightly in taxes payable 2011 by $1.9 million and are reduced in taxes payable 2012, that's fiscal 13, by $1.9 million. So for the tails biennium, those two levy years largely offset each other. So, Mr. Chairman, that concludes the property tax tracking. I'll pause there and see if there's questions.
Any questions, members?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, my question is not really about a tax issue. I just want to raise up an issue, but I'll let Senator Scheid.
Senator Scheid, tax question?
Well, Mr. Chair, I was going to ask Mr. Nolan about line 25. Is that the voter-approved referendum line?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Senator Scheid.
And Mr. Nolan, I see that's gone from, 500 to 985 from now to 13. What are they forecasting there? Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Scheid, I think if you look in fiscal 2002, the property tax referenda were at $364.4 million. And in the subsequent year, members will recall that we did the 415 transfer. You see it drops down to $226.3 in the subsequent year. That's not the total value of the 415 transfer because there were many referendum elections in that year. And it was essentially a levy opportunity where districts could add back and tell their voters, you stay at the same level if you add this levy. But there was a drop nevertheless. And then there's been growth, and this has been the large area of levy growth in the subsequent years. So I think if you look out to fiscal 13, we're projecting $984.4 million. There's often questions associated with how that's whether that includes growth assumption, and it does. The Department of Education forecasts that growth assumption, and that's part of what you're seeing into the future years. Am I getting at your question, Senator?
Absolutely.
Question?
Thank you, Mr. Nauman.
Where is he talking about?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, if nobody has any other questions, I do want to ask about a policy change in here having to do with the fire drills, and I just wondered, it was brought to my attention this morning by Mr. Zickman and by my chief from Brooklyn Park, and it's on page 52. So it's sections 23 and 24. And I don't know what the chair would like us to do. I don't know how you feel about that. I'd like to hear the rationale, and if there's a cost, I mean, kind of a measurable or quantifiable cost, I'd be, you know, I guess I'd have to think about that. But I think having participated as a substitute teacher in a number of fire drills, I know that that is something that the schools take very seriously. And when I'm in a new building, that's one of the things I always check, because that's in everybody's folder for who's going to be a substitute. And I just wonder, you've taken the drills from 5 to 2, and this is what, I guess you're taking the lockdown drills from 5 to 2 as well as the fire drills from 5 to 2. So that concerns me, because 2 in a school year of 9 months is pretty few and far between. I think the students,
Mr. Chairman,
and staff probably
I would
need
also
more.
Want to know where, if there is a savings, where is that reflected on any of these sheets of paper?
Senator Stump, are we tracking any savings with this policy change?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Senator Rest and Senator Scheid. There is no state savings. Throughout the bill, you'll see one of the things that we did were tried to address some of the issues that school districts had with flexibility. And so this was one of those issues that we had. There's actually the a provision, page 111, too, that relates to it. This is the report that you're dealing with on section 25, page 53. The other one is section 95 on page 111. So there's no cost savings that we're dealing with. This is just more flexibility that I think districts were seeking, and there was quite a bit of discussion in committee on that, both around the need for having prepared the students and everything, and the way they did it. And there were I think there's a lot of districts across the state. This is kind of the very bare minimum. There's a lot of districts that do 6, you know, fire drills or lockdowns. And so this is not reflective of what they have to do, but what would be, I mean, this is reflective of the bare minimum, not what districts are actually doing out there.
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Mr.
Chairman, would it be appropriate to ask someone representing the fire marshal, fire marshal himself, and also my chief to just comment on this? I think they have a real valid concern, and they're here.
I think, Senator Scheid, it would be good to hear from the fire people, but I do think, in fairness to the school boards, we probably should give them an opportunity also. But
Mr.
Chairman, anybody from the fire service like to testify on this provision?
Mr. Chairman, when someone's coming forward, I'd be interested, Senator Stump, you know, we have these mandate relief bills and increased flexibility bills, whatever you want to call it. And the main one is Senator Berglund's Senate file two, I think
three.
It is, three. Is it the case that, I mean, I would see this as one of those issues. Is it the case that the ones concerning K-12 education are in this bill and will not be in Senator Berglund's bill?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Rest, no, there's a goodly number in Senator Berglund's bill. The ones that actually, and I'm not sure why this probably wasn't in there, but the ones that actually had a fiscal kind of a connection, we tried to keep in here. Mm-hmm. And this one, I don't think it, you know, I suppose we don't, it doesn't have a fiscal connection necessarily back to the state. But I guess it has a fiscal connection to the local community or local district. So, but it may have been included in the package that went to the Finance Committee, I believe to the Rules Committee, and then connected to up with Senator Berglund's other proposals. I'm not sure, but I'll have to check that.
Mr. Chairman,
your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Mr. Chairman, Ken Prilliman, Fire Chief, City of Brooklyn Park. We're opposed to the change in the language, as the committee may already be aware. In previous years, the minimum number moved from 9 to 5. This proposal would move it from 5 to 2. The nature of teaching kids these skills are lifetime skills. The nature of being repetitive in teaching these skills ensures that in the event that one of these emergencies or one of these drills events turns out to be an incident, these kids are prepared to exit the school in a safe manner. In Brooklyn Park, we have a significant percentage of our population that is foreign-born, which additionally creates challenges from both a cultural challenge as well as language barriers in terms of educating the kids, in terms of proper fire safety and exit techniques. Reducing the number of drills to 2 would further challenge us in terms of keeping these kids safe. Further, in Brooklyn Park, we have a significant number of students who begin the school year but are of a transient nature and end up transferring throughout the year. So based on timing, it is possible they could be in a school and miss a fire drill and not be properly prepared in the event of an emergency.
Good point.
Mr. Chair, members, Niles Zuckman representing the fire chiefs. Mr. Chair, thank you for the time. I know you usually don't deal with this policy here. I'll just be brief. Just would add to that just about every code provision that comes about results as a loss of destruction of property or loss of life. And this dates back to the horrific fire in Chicago in 1958 when 92 children were killed in our Lady of Angels Church. And so we don't need to learn those lessons again. We don't like to do the doom and gloom, but all of our code has been driven by those type of events. And so we just encourage the committee and the members to reconsider and leave this at 5. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Rest.
Sir, did I understand you correctly that it used to be 9 were required? Is that what you said?
That is correct.
When did it go to 5?
Madam Chair, members, I believe that change was 2 or 3 years ago when we added some of the other type drills, the lockdown drills.
Okay.
And although we weren't happy with that, we understood there was a need to also drill on that. And so the fact that they're drilling just about every month was a nice compromise.
I see. Thank you.
Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Stump, we've heard some testimony here about foreign-born students and transients. Is there anything in this that would prevent that school district from doing 5 or 9 drills?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Skoy, I know in testimony in our division, there were a number of districts that have multiple drills. I think Bloomington, I'm not positive of the other districts, but some of them had, you know, 6. Some of them had broken them up so that they worked with different age levels a little differently so that they tried to work with, let's say, the kindergarten students so that they understood what was going on versus, you know, let's say the high school high school seniors. And I think it related around the flexibility of trying to train the students to respond to a fire or some kind of a disaster.
Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Stump, so differing school districts are doing different numbers drills. Now, are they? Do you know what are the administration doing? I mean, they must be assessing the preparedness of their students and then making some determination about the number of drills that they need. What's going on with regard to that?
Senator Stump.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Skoy, it might be good to hear from the School Boards Association. I think they were the ones that kind of gave the most explanation in terms of what's going on.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, Senator Skoy. My name is Grace Kelleher, and I represent the Minnesota School Boards Association. This was part of the school district's recommendation to the governor, the Senate, and the House on mandate reductions. We started off with about 100, and I want to thank Senator Stump for his support as we move forward. We're trying to really address those items. School districts have adopted multiple policies, and they have multiple statutes that require schools to be ready for a crisis or an emergency. As the law is very clear, this is a minimum threshold. We have many districts that decide to do more and certainly encourage them to work with their local fire departments and their local police departments to be ready for these emergencies and keep kids safe. So we don't feel this would be a limiting piece. I would like the ability to work with the fire chiefs and figure out this language and make sure it's sort of good for all of us. They make a good case, and we'd like to be able to come back with an amendment, if you would consider it, on the floor that would address all three of these. And some states use a little bit different language that may give us a little bit more flexibility on the lockdown side.
Ms. Kelleher, I think the fear might be, what if the House bill has exactly the same language in it?
Senator Bach, are you trying to be tricky? I'd rather not talk about the other body while I'm sitting here. But certainly, if there would be comfort in it, my sort of goal that I'm looking at is five fire drills do seem to sort of work. So that's, I think we're ready already to that point. It would be how you address the lockdown drills and how we help elementary children through that process. And we have a lot of other emergency drills we need to address too. So if you'd like to go to five and that would provide this committee comfort, we would be okay with that.
Senator Moore.
Mr. Chair, when I told the Judiciary Committee members that I was leaving the Judiciary Committee upstairs to come down here to the Tax Committee to talk about a fire drill provision that was in the education bill, Senator Betzel said, why are you talking about judiciary language in an education bill in the Tax Committee? So, Mr. Chair, I think that we should remove the language from the bill unless this provision needs, if the Education Committee is comfortable talking about this. I think the Judiciary Committee is not, and I don't know why we're having this conversation in the tax bill, in the Tax Committee. It's not related to taxes unless there's a tax, some kind of tax implication in this provision. I don't know why we're spending Tax Committee time talking about this provision.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Moore, we're, and I'm supposed to be in the Judiciary Committee as we speak, brought it up because my fire chief and Mr. Zickman talked to me before the hearing, and there are several of us, Senator Dibble, Senator Rest, myself, who are concerned about this. And I understand the jurisdictional issue. I guess I'd like to move to take it out of the bill. Section 23, on page 52, section 23, page 53, section 24, and at least page 111, section 95, I think. I don't know if there was another page. I think there was.
Mr. Chairman, there was some addition, and Senator Scheid, there was some additional language that may make you want to think how we do that amendment. Senator Marty had some a provision that sort of engrossed. We took two bills and engrossed them together. For example, on page 52, section 23, There is that language on line 32 and 33 that said, and an expectation that students be present and participate in these drills. There was some conversation in the committee about how they were doing these drills in some cases without students. So I think the recommendation would be to just strike the stricken language.
Mr. Chairman, that's what I would do. I'd move to strike the stricken language. I have been told that this is in a bill on the floor today.
Take it out there, too.
So we'll look at it there as
Senator
well.
Senator Shedd, is your motion to delete the new language and reinsert the stricken language?
No, leave the new language. Leave the new language. Two. So on page 52, lines 31 and 32, you'd restore the stricken language.
Mr. Chairman.
That's for lockdown.
I apologize for interrupting, Senator Shedd. I think that if you're just doing the fire drills, you would be not doing the change on 52.31, but doing the change on 52.32. And then on page 53, line 6, delete 2 and reinstate 5 would be the appropriate motion. And including that, carrying forward, on page 111, line 20, delete 2 and reinstate 5 should accomplish, I think, what you're thinking.
And Mr. Chairman, could Mr. Nauman explain the impact of that, if that is Senator Scheid's motion, how many lockdowns would there be drills and how many fire drills?
Mr. Nauman, if that oral amendment is adopted, how many lockdown drills and how many fire drills would be the minimum required number?
Mr. Chairman and members, it looks like 8. We would have 2 school lockdown drills. We would have 5 school fire drills and 1 tornado drills, and we would expect students to be present.
Senator Marty.
Mr. Chair, Senator, I'd prefer the 5 lockdown, 5 fire drills, just the expectation students be present. But so I'd encourage you to reinstate both 5s and strike both 2s.
Senator Moore, what does the chair of the judiciary think?
Well, personally, I would reinstate all the original language, Mr. Chair. But the problem is that we haven't had a chance to talk about this, and from a public safety perspective, I think the judiciary members would be very interested in that discussion. However, out of respect for Senator Stumpf, I'm not going to make this bill come to judiciary, and I think that we should reinstate the current language and let there be a floor discussion. If there's a desire to take it down to 2, then I think that we ought to let that be a floor discussion to see where the members are at. I think that if this bill had come to the Judiciary Committee, that this provision would not pass. The new language would not pass from a public safety standpoint.
Mr. Chairman,
does Council understand the amendment? We reinstate all the numbers and leave the new language.
And the expectation.
Participation language.
The participation language. So that appears in Section 23 and 24 of Article 2. Appears in Section 95 also. On page 111. And was there? And there's no other place.
Got it.
Senator Squay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't know if Senator Stump cares to comment on this or not, but I just wanted to say, change is hard, isn't it, Senator Stump?
I was just thinking, Mr. Chairman, that it's been probably about 20-some years since I've been on the Judiciary Committee, and I kind of forgot what jurisdictions that they actually have over there.
Lots.
Senator Stump, how wed is the Education Committee to this language?
Well,
Was there a lot of discussion about it?
Mr. Chairman, there actually was quite a bit of discussion, but I think we definitely want to do what's good for our students. It's just on the flip side, when you look at the appropriations and the reductions that we make, it's very difficult to see $1 billion pulled out of our education system. So we're trying to accommodate and kind of mitigate what the impact of that is, too. So, I mean, that's kind of the effort that we were working on.
Senator Moore, is it too late for the Judiciary Committee to have a little discussion about this language if we take it out here?
Well, Ms. Chair, we're sitting upstairs right now. I think we could take the language up there. But my sense is that, I mean, if it generated discussion in the Education Committee, I think it'll generate discussion in the Judiciary Committee. And, you know, we could have that discussion upstairs today, or we could have that discussion on the floor. It's on the other bill. So, you know, I mean, the fire marshals are here, so we could take the whole group upstairs for that discussion. But my sense is that there will be a hesitancy on the part of the members.
Everybody understand the Scheid oral motion?
Isn't that courts?
All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no.
No.
The motion prevails. Senator Stumpf, you lost another little piece.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Moore.
I'd like to add a piece. Mr. Chair, I'd like to offer the A42 amendment. And I move the A42 amendment once it gets to all the members. Mr. Chair, members, and
Senator Wong moves the A42 amendment.
And Senator Stumpf, the A42 amendment, our language on the provisions of Senator Phoebe's Children with Disability Bill that came before the Judiciary Committee the other day. I understand procedurally that the language of her bill was amended into Omnibus Education Bill upstairs, and then simultaneously she was presenting the bill in Judiciary. The A42 amendment represents the changes in language to those sections of the bill that were in the jurisdiction of the Judiciary Committee. And so procedurally, we thought that instead of having her go back and from a time perspective, because the committee bill is being put together, this goes contrary to what I was saying earlier, but this is in an effort to help Senator Phoebe put her bill in the shape that she needs it to be in the omnibus bill. I think that we could have done this on the floor and it would have been all right, but I thought since we caught up to you, it's better for you to take an engrossed version to the floor. So the A42 amendment represents the work that was done on the Judiciary Committee to the language that's already in the bill. And if it's inappropriate, I'd be glad to offer it on the floor.
Senator Stump?
I was just going to, Mr. Chairman, just wondering if there is a tax provision in this one. But.
Well, then I withdraw the A42 amendment. I will make that offer on the floor.
Okay.
Senator Stump, I'm wondering about the hockey provision in the bill.
A what?
Is there a hockey provision in the bill?
A hockey provision? Well, there's a lot of schools in the state that play hockey. That's. Mr. Chairman, I believe that there probably is.
Where would we find it, Senator Stump? Page 29. Council tells me, members, page 29.
It was after about, I think, about 18 hours of discussion in our committee, and probably one of the last amendments that got offered that I think somehow evaded the chair.
Line 29.9 and 29.10, members.
Okay.
Say again, Mr. Chairman.
29.9 and 29.10.
Oh.
Senator Stump, I was just thinking, I didn't play hockey. I played football. And I was wondering if this said football, if there might be a little economic development provision that somewhere later on in the session might be germane to the education bill. I have this little economic development project that's being considered, kind of looking for a place to put it.
Could maybe attach a levy in Hennepin County or something.
Not funny.
Senator Stump, we're making some headway. Senator Pogemiller, you're a basketball fan. What do you think about hockey as our state sport?
I don't think this provision should be in an education bill, but
Won't these kind of provisions usually run as standalone bills? I think was our most recent one the state apple? And Senator LeClaire brought us
Senator
the state apple.
Senator LeClaire's a re-election bill, Mr. Chair.
Actually, Mr. Chairman, the hockey as a state sport was introduced as a separate bill. I think it was either last year or the year before, Senator Jen Olson responding to, as these things often are, school class project, and had a thorough hearing in the state and local government committee, and I think it found its way and was passed there, found its way into some omnibus bill was eventually eliminated. So it has been a bill before, but not this year.
Committee, have any thoughts on it? Senator Pogemiller, we'd like to make a motion.
I'd move to delete section 1, page 29.
Senator Pogemiller moves in article 2, page 29, delete sections 29.9 and 29.10. Any discussion, members? Senator Stout?
Mr. Chairman, I knew there was a reason I came here.
Trying to make your load a little lighter to carry.
The chair was overrun in his own committee, so.
All in favor of the Pogemiller motion, say aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no.
No.
The motion prevails. Any other discussion, members? Senator Pogemiller moves Senate File 1328 as amended. Be recommended to pass.
That's Scoy's motion?
Senator Pogemiller's motion. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no.
No.
Motion prevails. Senator Stump, thank you.
Thank you very much.
I hope we've made your load easier to carry.
It's lighter.
We're talking hockey.
Senator Carlson, Senate File 1757. And members, we've got an hour left before we go up to the floor, and we've got five bills. So if we can take not more than 6 or 8 minutes apiece, we can get our work done. Senator Carlson.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, is that said for my benefit? Okay. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate File 1757 covers a TIF extension. This is for a district in Eagan which had been duly authorized and was in process. This is a particular area that I've watched throughout my life be developed. It was the site of Eagan's first bank, the site of Eagan's first shopping center, upscale menswear, movie theater, everything. And now it's being revitalized. We had formerly had a significant crossroads there, but when the new 77 went through, it limited the access to it. And what we're trying to do is redevelop it, revitalize it, and get it started again. With me is my mayor, the Honorable Mike McGuire from Eagan, and also the Economic Development Director for Eagan, Mr. John Hohenstein. And Mr. McGuire will have the presentation. He'll take the presentation from now.
Mr. Mayor, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you very much. I appreciate your time, and I will try to be brief. I want to call your attention to a handout with some maps that I'll make some reference to of the redevelopment area. I want to thank you, Mr. Chair and members, for the opportunity to speak to you again today in support of Senator Coleman's SF 1757. Through Senator Carlson's bill, the City of Eagan is effectively requesting a 7-year extension of the terms of our Cedar Grove TIF district by resetting the start of the district's 25-year clock from the first collection of increment from the new development in the core area, which is expected to start later on this year. I first want to give you some background. Located at the intersection of Cedar Avenue and Highway 13, and there's a map graphic in your packet, the Cedar Grove area was once the gateway to Eagan and to our corner of Dakota County. Retail in the area developed in the 1960s around the old intersection of Cedar Avenue and Highway 13 and was anchored by the Cedar Vale Mall. In 1982, the new Cedar Freeway opened with its interchange with Highway 13, and that took traffic around instead of through the area, and you also have a graphic of the layout of the area at that time. Fueled by this diversion of traffic from the Grove's front door, the area went into a slow decline with notable increases in non-retail uses filling storefronts and area buildings left vacant by previous retail tenants. For nearly 20 years, the city worked with remaining business owners to revitalize the once vibrant area, but the area's layout with many small lots and irregularly shaped lots really worked against the market to revitalize the area on its own. When the decline within the area began to threaten to devalue residential neighborhoods surrounding the mall area, the city decided it was time to step in. The Cedar Grove Redevelopment District was created in 2003 to prevent further decline and revitalize the Grove with market-supportable, transit-oriented, mixed-use development. The district's core was made up of 40 parcels centered around the mall that needed to be acquired, assembled, and reshaped to meet the needs of today's development market. As we began, more than half, 57%, of the district's properties, including the mall itself, were substandard. Over several years, the city worked to acquire properties and worked with businesses to help them relocate on the redevelopment area's periphery or in other locations that would work for them. It has been important to us to work with area businesses, but it was a time-consuming process that took longer than the original district certification anticipated. The core area and the centerpiece of the redevelopment really couldn't begin being redeveloped until all properties within it had been acquired and assembled. Now, 6 years after the district certification, acquisition is nearly complete, but the development market has progressively stagnated. We're asking for this extension because while we've worked with business owners, purchased dozens of individual properties and invested significantly in public improvements to ready the area for redevelopment, the city has accumulated and is now carrying significant holding costs. Meanwhile, stagnant development and tightening credit markets threaten delays in the kind of development to create the increment necessary to recoup these expenditures. The city is in serious discussion of phase one of the redevelopment plan, and that construction could begin later on this year. This extension that we're requesting would allow the district's term to reset and realign with the development, with that development and with current markets. Mr. Chair, we remain committed to a redevelopment vision that is market sustainable over the long term, that helps the city stop decline and stabilize values in and around the district itself, and helps the region address important challenges like life cycle and affordable housing alternatives that are underrepresented in the community. We in the city have been patient and worked towards a sustainable redevelopment that serves current and future businesses and residents of the Cedar Grove area. Remaining committed to that vision through the acquisition and assembly process and through the current markets has not been easy, but that patience is important to the long-term success and sustainability of the revitalization project. I want to thank you again for the chance to speak to you, Mr. Chair, and I'll remain open for questions as necessary.
Senator Carlson.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I want to make sure that I emphasize that this has been covered with the county, and the county is in full support.
Anything else? Senator Dibble.
Just a little personal trivia. This is where I bought my first pair of glasses in high school at an optometrist that was in that old mall there.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dibble, they still look good.
Anything else, members? Senator Carlson, Mr. Mayor, thank you. Charlie's over at Senate File 1757 for consideration of the omnibus bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Metzen.
Thank you.
Senator Metzen, Senate File 1881.
Now that's correct, Mr. Chairman. This allows for our HRA in South St. Paul to extend its TIF district and create a new TIF district. This was heard in Senator Scoy's committee a couple weeks ago. Quickly, and we worked out a deal with the county where apparently that was one of the concerns of Senator Scoy and his committee, and we've got them on board now so that there's the capture there will be shared some of it with the county. So I think that roadblock was taken out of the way. I don't want to give a long presentation about South St. Paul, but I'll give you about a minute's worth. 30-some years ago, we were devastated in our area when SWIP and Armors pulled out. 7,000 union workers lost their jobs within a 2 or 3 year period. It took up most of the riverfront in our community, and since then we've been fighting and struggling to rebuild that area, and we're not quite there yet. The mayor and the city council and the HRA have done a great job over the years, but ours is, I think, fairly unique. I think it was about 250, 300 acres down there that was used up by the stockyards. There are no stockyards left, no SWIFT, no Armors. So that's why we're asking for this extension.
Which we should do.
I've got the mayor here and to my right, and Brown and Lindell from the HRA if you need any further testimony.
Maybe not.
Any questions?
We did hear, Senator Metzen, you had another bill.
Yes.
Yeah.
This one, we thought the last one wasn't all that good. Is this one better?
This one's real good.
This one's
some suggestions from the House tax chair. And so I am Beth Baum and the mayor. So we took some suggestions and rewrote it as a new district, modeling it after the Minneapolis and St. Paul districts.
Provision
bills.
From last year.
Right.
Senator Scoy was involved in that conversation also.
Senator Scoy.
And Mr. Chair, Senator Metzen, the original bill was an extension of a pre-79 TIF, and
right.
This is a redo of that. And I think Senator Metzen, you're right, it's needed. You've got good language here.
We have I'm not going to read it now, but we have quite a history of our community. I think it's not total history, of course, but in front of you there that shows what happened over the years. And not unlike some of our Ranger brothers and sisters that lost their main economy up there. And it, no different in South St. Paul, when we lost 7,000 union jobs. And it was about 30 to 40% of our entire tax base was at those stockyards and SWIP and Armor, and no longer there. So we had to put in infrastructure, sewer, water. We got contaminated land down there that we're still battling for. We're getting some deed money, but yet the community needs this additional leverage for a few more years.
Senator Metzen, council has a suggestion. If we really want to make this consistent with what we did last year for Minneapolis and St. Paul, there's a little education piece that needs to be added. Council?
Mr. Chairman, members, the difference between the provisions that were in last year's omnibus tax bill for St. Paul and Minneapolis, where the same kind of principle was applied so that a new district was created where there had been a pre-79 district, in those provisions, the adjusted net tax capacity was computed for the city, county, and school district as if this captured net tax capacity of the district was included. This bill doesn't include that provision for the school districts.
That's correct.
That's correct. That is correct. That
right.
Is intentionally was written that way.
Right.
We wrangled a great deal in conference committee last year getting to, I think this committee is interested in it being consistent with what we did for Minneapolis and St. Paul.
Okay.
It works.
And then I think we probably got a deal.
Let's make a deal.
Anything
they,
else, members?
They say that works.
That had more to do with ongoing state, with both the school board's levy and ongoing state responsibilities.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Anything else, members? Shirley is over Senate File 1881. Thank you, Senator Metzen.
Thank you very much,
Madam Mayor.
Yes. Accommodating us.
Senator Foley. Member Senator Foley has Senate File 1866. Senator Foley, welcome to the Tax Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's been a long time since I was on that. 13 years, I think. Delighted to be here, and I want to acknowledge my co-worker, Senator Johnson, and I'll, after a bit, talk and introduce the city manager in Coon Rapids. This is a really what I'm going to give you is a very short pitch and let the city manager handle that. It's a bill that deals with a duration of 11 tax increment finance districts in the city and want to extend those till December 31st, 2020. And with that, why that tells you where we are. I know that I think there's some maps and a variety of other things that the city manager will do that. So I think rather than my taking your time, why I'll introduce Matt Fulton, the city manager in Coon Rapids.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members.
Thank you. And your name for the record, please.
My name is Matt Fulton, and I'm the city manager in Coon Rapids.
Thank you.
Well, thank you for the chance to speak with you this morning about this this legislation. Senator Foley indicated there are 11 TIF districts that are going to be decertifying over the next several years that we would like to extend into the year 2020 in order to allow us to reconstruct Coon Rapids Boulevard. Any of you that have been on Coon Rapids Boulevard in recent past knows the blighted conditions that is being experienced on this road. It's over 50 years old. At one time, of course, it was one of the major corridors coming through Coon Rapids. But when State Highway 10 was constructed, it started to show its sign of age and has lacked any kind of reinvestment into the infrastructure. It continues to be not only an important transportation corridor, but also an economic corridor, extending for about 7 miles and connecting essentially Anoka and Mercy Hospital all the way down to Northtown and Blaine. And it's simply been one of those projects that there aren't any resources to get towards. But as you start to think about a community like Coon Rapids trying to prompt reinvestment by private parties, the condition of the infrastructure is a big deterrent towards anybody's interest in privately reinvesting. And as we're all dealing with our economic issues, we're trying to figure out ways to revitalize our property tax base. Just to give you a sense for the condition of the road, most of the intersections along that section have D, E, or F levels of service, which means that the traffic flow is very poor and accidents are high. In fact, over 15% of all accidents occurring in Coon Rapids happen on Coon Rapids Boulevard in that section that I'm sharing with you. There are several schools that are located along the boulevard, yet they're broken up and they're fragmented and they're not connected, and so one of the objectives here is to try to make the road more pedestrian-friendly and safer for the students that are actually using it. As you see in the map, there are four distinct areas which really relate to the planning work that we've been doing over the past many years. There's a framework that's been developed for Coon Rapids Boulevard that provides for getting traffic to and from along the corridor, but also provides for more intense development in the areas that are identified as ports. And you'll see there are four ports along that area. So we have zoning districts that are established, and simply really trying to wait for the economy to come around and for hopefully dealing with this infrastructure issue for allowing us to spur on redevelopment within those specific port areas. We've, of course, as a city, been actively engaged in redevelopment. We've acquired several sites, and we're really hoping to prompt the private redevelopment of those sites as soon as all the conditions are ripe for seeing that redevelopment. And we think that this infrastructure project is really one of the critical elements of it. We're partnering up right now with Anoka County in conjunction with others to do an access management study, which really anticipates the long-term future of the boulevard. And the reason I bring that up is only to try to indicate that the timing is really right for doing something along this line, because within the next year or so, we'll have a good sense for what the future traffic demands will be for the Coon Rapids Boulevard. I want to just identify a couple of quotations that came out of the Minneapolis paper last week. Anoka County has been facilitating some focus groups of interested parties relating to Coon Rapids Boulevard and the future of Coon Rapids Boulevard. In the case of Coon Rapids Boulevard, county and staff members were alarmed by the number of fatal and injury accidents along its length. In our area, it seems the goal is to make it look as ugly as possible, said Mary Blankenship, an Anoka resident, who was especially concerned about the number of excess signs along the corridor. I just want to get through it because it's so ugly. You just want to get from point A to point B. It's like a ghost town, said Coon Rapids resident Butch Satzinger. Others bemoan the lack of good grocery store on the strip and the lack of a variety of restaurants because so many businesses have relocated to Riverdale Shopping Center. One of the reasons why this is such an important project for our community is because we really do need to revitalize the overall community, and this corridor is the main entry point into the community. And this ties directly into schools, in my mind. 15 years ago, 38% of the households in Coon Rapids had children in school. Now that figure is 24%. So less than a quarter of the homes in Coon Rapids have school-aged children in the homes. And the blighted corridor, such as the Coon Rapids Boulevard, really does make it difficult to attract any families or private investment to the community. As the budget is proposed, the increment that would be collected under this extension would be pushed back into the infrastructure and on the boulevard to pay for reconstruction of the roads, trails, all of those kinds of things that would assist in dealing with the public infrastructure. The boulevard is actually under county jurisdiction, and one of the important aspects of extending any kind of a tax increment district is to make sure that the county board and the school board are in favor. I've had communications with both jurisdictions, and both, while neither body has formally acted on this legislation, both have indicated their support for moving this thing forward. County perspective understands that they don't have the resources to deal with this and are interested in moving it forward, and the school district certainly appreciates and respects the impact that it would have on the way families look at investment opportunities in Coon Rapids.
Mr. Chairman?
Of the 11 districts, is it 11 districts we're talking about?
There are 11 pre-1990 districts.
And what are their expiration dates? Do we know kind of?
Chair and committee members, there are two districts that will expire in 2010. There are an additional two that would expire in 2011. There are an additional two that would expire in 2012. They'll all be fully expired in 2014. The difficulty in, or one of the issues that would need to be addressed in potentially phasing this in is that if we were to get into a road infrastructure project, the road infrastructure is probably a $15 million project. And so if we phase this in over time, it makes it difficult to actually finance any kind of a road reconstruction project. Yeah, but they do become decertified over the next 5 years.
You know, our thought generally is at some point property that's under TIF is supposed to go on the tax rolls. And so I think we kind of have a general reluctance to make extensions that at some point TIF districts are intended to expire. So it would seem to me if something hasn't developed, we intended the more sensible thing is to create a new district.
Mr. Chair and committee members, one of the unique aspects of this is that as we're trying to figure out how to confront the economic downturn and revitalize the boulevard and prompt private reinvestment, we need to have a significant amount of resources that currently are not available for addressing these public investment responsibilities. Because these tax increment districts are in existence and because they are pre-1990 districts established, the earliest one is established in 1982, so they're not pre-79 districts. It provides us an opportunity to simply capitalize on this revenue stream that are being generated by these districts in order to accomplish something that would otherwise not be done short of finding some significant additional amount of transportation dollars somewhere.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd just like to reiterate and give a visual on this corridor. There was development, beautiful development, over in what's called Riverdale Crossing.
Yes.
So the businesses literally leaped over there, and there's like 90% vacant buildings, literally, that should just probably be bulldozed because, like, as he said, who wants to invest there? The other concern, to reiterate, is Anoka Hennepin School District 11 imposed the 2-mile walk limit, so there's kids crossing from neighborhoods over this boulevard with really poor traffic signaling.
Senator Foley?
Mr. Chairman and committee members, I want you to know that if you look at the maps that the city has provided, you'll see down on the bottom on the right-hand side, Foley Transit Station area. And I want you to know that I was born right in that area and lived there until I graduated from Anoka High School. So we have had a beautiful road through the years there, but it's all gone now, and he needs this help. And so I'm hoping that you can see the fit award to this, to Coon Rapids.
Senator Foley, is that transit station named after somebody?
My grandfather, yes.
Huh, that's cool.
And there's a boulevard, too.
Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the city manager. The Riverdale Transit Station area and this Foley Transit Station area, are they any of these tax increment financing district numbers that are listed in the bill?
Mr. Chair, Senator Scorey, no, they are not. The districts are not identified on the map, and the legislation is not intended to benefit the Riverdale Transit Station, which is currently the only approved transit station that will get underway this fall.
I don't know where the district is.
Are there tan colored lines on the map? Is that the area that is in the district that run along the perimeter of the corridor?
That's, Mr. Chair and committee members, that's the intended area where the investment would occur. What that really is intended to do is to encompass the commercial parcels that front the boulevard.
So that's where the money would be spent, but where are the existing districts?
Mr. Chair, committee members, I'm sorry, the existing districts are scattered around the community and are not shown on the map.
Okay.
But under current law, those pre-1990 districts provide for the opportunity to pool increment. And so that's why it's 11 districts. Each of those districts were established around a project that occurred in Coon Rapids in 1982 and probably in the next 10 years.
So and those projects worked pretty well. They got built out, redeveloped.
They've all been built out, and they continue to provide cash flow, which are paying off the public debt for those particular districts that will be paid off at the time of their current approved decertification. And the intent here is to simply allow them to continue on so we continue to capture those increments for the next 10 years.
Well, I think we understand your reason to want to capture the money. Yeah. What I think we're struggling with is the district accomplished its purpose, and now that property should really come on the tax rolls, and just spending it somewhere else because it's available, I think we struggle with. But I understand the reason to want to do that. I'm just wondering if the better policy would be to just to establish a new district in the area where you want to do the new redevelopment.
I don't know why they would.
Senator Foley, anything further?
No, Your Honor.
Chair lays over Senate File 1866 for possible inclusion in the committee bill. Thank you.
Thank you.
Senator Scheid? Chairman Shad, this doesn't look like it's getting any easier.
Chairman, we're all in a world of hurt.
Trying to solve problems, aren't we?
That's what we're doing. That's what we're trying to do. We're going to do 1895.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, this deals obviously with LGA cuts. I know the committee doesn't need to be reminded of the issues that are involved there. And so this would allow cities that have those aid reductions and, well, I won't go into that, to transfer surplus or excess increments to their general fund to try to offset those aid cuts. And I have city manager of Brooklyn Park, Jamie Verbrugge, here to it's a little more technical than what I just said. I mean, it talks about how the transfer could occur, and it would be the lesser of two factors here, but I'll let Mr. Verbrugge talk to you about our community, but there's more than our community, as you know.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Jamie Verbrugge. I'm the city manager of the city of Brooklyn Park, and appreciate Senator Scheid's support and recognition for the needs in our own community. Really, what this does is it adds another tool to the toolbox for cities in terms of addressing what we're all facing right now. Brooklyn Park's own specifics, the governor's proposed budget, we would lose $1.6 million in market value and LGA combined. And that would be for both 2009 and 2010. And really what we're trying to do is just find some mechanisms that would allow us to bridge that gap. What this bill would do in terms of identifying areas of excess revenue that's being generated in TIF is not to extend TIF, as some other cities have requested, but really to take advantage of taxpayer money that's there right now that's locked up inside of a district and can't be utilized. And if you're wondering how this happens, just real broad generalization, when we put together a tax increment district and we estimate the costs and the revenues that are going to come in, revenues are estimated fairly conservatively so that we don't put the taxpayers in jeopardy. What ends up happening sometimes is you'll see market values for successful projects generating more taxes than was estimated, and you'll see eligible expenses maybe be less than what we had projected. What ends up happening is you end up generating a little bit more revenue in your TIF district than you might otherwise have. When the TIF district comes off line then, those taxes obviously go back into the city pool. All we're asking is that we be able to access those earlier to try and really bridge the gap between what we have as our estimated costs right now and what we have as our estimated revenues. And I'll tell you from a management perspective, the way that we're trying to approach our city budget going into next year is to make sure that we get into structural balance. I'm going to do everything I can to help our city council make sure that we don't have to rely on one-time money. So I'm not by any means suggesting that we're absolutely relying on this bill, but again, it's another tool. It gives us one more possible revenue to bridge that gap if we're not able to get into structural balance, because we're starting next year in Brooklyn Park with a $2 million hole, and we've got a lot of work to do. I think we'll be successful, but it may be that what we're looking at to define success might take us a couple years to get there, and this provides a mechanism, once again, to bridge that gap. So with that quick overview, I think I'll turn it back to you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee for any questions that you might have.
Thank you. Any questions, members? Senator Scheid, pretty precedent-setting here.
Mr. Chairman, everything about the times is precedent-setting, I think, for our people.
Senator Rest, what do you think? You worked on TIF a lot back in the 90s.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Scheid, I would be very cautious of this precedent. If the district is doing excess increment, we're talking about economic development here, not propping up a city's budget. And I, I'm sympathetic to looking everywhere for money, but what they could do is decertify the district early, and get the money coming in if they have a lot of excess increment, then get rid of the district and
maintain the city's tax rate
and put the property back on the tax rolls.
Mr. Verbrugge would like to just comment. I mean, I understand where Senator Rest went.
If I may, Mr. Chair, and Senator Rest, thank you. In our own particular circumstance, and I can't speak to every city that might be able to utilize this provision, but in our own particular circumstance, we're talking about districts that still have remaining obligations. So when we're identifying excess revenue, it's really just that increment above our ongoing obligation. So decertifying a district early, there may not be enough accumulated as yet to satisfy the obligation. So what we're really doing is taking what's left after we satisfy our obligations in those districts.
And why would the county think this is a good idea?
Mr. Chair, I haven't asked the county yet if they think this is a good idea. And Senator Rest and I did have the chance to talk about this when we were first brainstorming a couple months ago, and she did identify that issue of the other taxing entities. And certainly I think that there's a way to resolve that, although in the House file we just have to reconcile that as well because it doesn't specify any allotment based on the different entities that might benefit from it. I think the last point that I would say is that for concerns that this money is dedicated towards economic development, and again, this is our own particular circumstance, we've identified increments that would not have an economic development purpose above the obligations that are outstanding. We do have some districts that still have some needs and eligible expenses, and we wouldn't be utilizing those. We'd only be utilizing the ones for which we don't have a development purpose in mind.
Senator Rest.
The other thing that would concern me about a proposal like this is that although the bill talks about it expiring at the end of 2012, I bet we'd have lots and lots of pressure to extend this provision for another 5 or 6 years when it when we were dealing with a sunset, and to use increments to replace LGA, we should be doing decent stuff with LGA and getting rid of LEMI limits rather than forcing cities to make these kinds of transfers. I mean, I understand the desperation, but I just think it's wrong.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Schein.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Verbrugge and I agree with Senator Rest in terms of we should do the right thing with LGA and levy limits. We understand.
And if I may, Mr. Chair and Senator Rest, I agree with you. It's a bit of a Faustian bargain. But, again, our own individual circumstances is that what this will allow us to do is to make sure that our budget in the future doesn't rely on the presumption of LGA or market value homestead credit ever accruing back to the city. So that's why it's a short term. And I do understand the concern.
You shouldn't be relying on excess increments either, though. Golly, it's not supposed to be for general purpose government.
It is not.
Does the League of Cities have any thoughts on this bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jennifer O'Rourke with the League of Minnesota Cities, and thank you for the opportunity to come up here. We've been discussing this with Brooklyn Park kind of since they came up with the idea. To their credit, they showed a lot of creativity, which I know we all encourage in this policy arena we work in. I guess we would support it from a flexibility for cities in these kind of unforeseen, hard times. The little bit that we've talked about it with other cities, I don't know that there would be a lot of cities who would choose to do this. I think Senator Rest has brought up a lot of good points, and we had the same discussion in the House last week, and it's a very similar discussion.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would be curious to know about the interaction. Let me say I'm sympathetic. I think it's creative. I commend Mr. Verbrugge and Senator Scheid for bringing this, I'm a little bit sympathetic to the idea, if there's excess increment, then it maybe should be going to the general fund. But I'm curious about excluding the value of this property from the overall property tax rolls for this particular municipality and how that interacts with AIDS and how that interacts with fiscal disparities, those sorts of things, because it feels a little bit like double dipping in that instance. So, you know, but that's something we can examine. I don't, and it sounds too like, which is creative, and I commend Mr. Verbrugge. Sounds like I'm reading back here in this language that other districts, if they have bonds that are still outstanding, they can kind of pool and satisfy the bond payments. You know, kind of shift around so they can find the increment with the most excess and dump that into the general fund. It's very creative.
Mr. Chair and committee members, Senator Dibble, thank you. The creativity often gets people in a lot of trouble, too. So, you know, I think the last comment I'd make to, I don't know if it satisfies Senator Rest's concerns or not, but I guess I would make the personal guarantee that we won't be back here asking for an extension, because the whole purpose for asking for this flexibility is simply to bridge the short-term gap. And that's why we put a sunset on it. We wanted to be very clear that we have no intention of relying on this or changing in any manner, at least with this bill as some sort of a Trojan horse, how TIF is utilized for the benefit of cities. So Brooklyn Park will not be back here asking for an extension, although I'll make no guarantee for anybody else who might utilize it. So.
Senator Scheid, anything further on this one?
No, Mr. Chairman. So.
Chair lays over Senate File 1895 for possible inclusion. Senator Senate File 1993.
And, Mr. Chairman, this pretty straightforward. It has to do with TIF districts that were created specifically for housing development and would extend the duration of those districts from 25 to 30 years, giving those groups, those districts, or those communities a little more breathing room to fulfill their financial obligations. Mr. Joe Wheeler of the Southeast Minnesota Multi-County HRA is here and may speak to this if you would.
No, they're not housing or redevelopment.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for allowing me to speak or testify today on behalf of this bill. I'm Joe Wheeler. I'm with the Southeast Minnesota Housing Authority and also here on behalf of Minnesota NARL as well. The first, I guess actually three parts to this, but or two parts to this. The first one, of course, with the downturn in the market and the drop in the property values, this extension would allow us an additional 5 years to capture needed dollars to meet current bond obligations within the development. The second one, which relates more especially in our organization, where we develop workforce housing in a number of those districts, we not only have the loss of the revenue on the properties, but we also are not meeting the build-up schedule as well. So again, this would assist us in negotiating with the banks. In fact, we are in negotiating with the banks, and there are, of course, one of our partners who bought the bonds. And are willing to lower interest rates, and then, of course, asking our county boards to allow us to increase our levy authority to meet bond obligations and hopefully be able to capture that back in future years as our economic times turn to the positive and pick up again. So with that, I'll turn that back to the chair for any questions that you might have.
Senator Scheid, do we have in your specific district, do you have a number of redevelopment districts that are expiring? Do we know kind of what the rest of this is?
I don't know that, and I don't know if Mr. Verbrugge.
I realize the bill is broader than that, but I'm just wondering in your specific instance.
We don't know, Mr. Chairman, and Bob Schreier would have known if he were here. He's not able to be here. I'm sorry.
So, Rick, what does the league think of this? Sure, an agreeable bunch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We try to be an agreeable bunch.
Thank you.
Jennifer Rourke with the league again. We would support the language as I read it before. I don't know off the top of my head the number of redevelopment districts in the state and how many this would affect. be certainly willing to work with staff and looking into that. I think that's a not hard thing to do.
Yeah, I think we need to find out kind of what the breadth of this is.
Mr. Chairman, there is some information around 1993, right? Yep. And it does have an analysis of there are 223 housing and redevelopment TIF districts with decertification dates in the next 5 years, totaling $36.6 million of captured value. And so it does give you some idea of the scope.
Anything else, members? Chair, I was over Senate File 1993 for possible consideration.
Mr. Chairman, thank you for
Senator Shad.
Hearing
thank
us.
You. Thank you,
we get a star for creativity or anything. giving out any awards. Thank you.
It's going to be an interesting conference. Anything else, members? I think that concludes our bills for today. Our next Property Tax Division is meeting tomorrow morning, 8:30, Senator Scoy?
Yeah, 8:30.
8:30, the full committee is meeting Tuesday after the break. Right away Tuesday when we come back.
We don't meet tomorrow.
The Property Tax Division is meeting tomorrow.
Okay.
And the full committee is meeting Tuesday after the recess, 12:30, I believe. After the recess, 12:30 on Tuesday after the recess. Anything else, members? This committee's adjourned.